VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, and it's 10 o'clock, and that can only mean one thing. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we're here anyway. How's that?
Yeah, it was what it was.
Yeah, I guess there's a limit to how much fun a couple of financial talk show hosts are allowed to have over the course of a couple of years. So, that in mind, we came back anyway. It wasn't. Yeah, it was that bad.
It was bad.
I almost said it wasn't.
No doubt. It was bad.
I lied. It was definitely not fun. But we'll talk about it. One of the main questions everybody's asking is, how unusual is this? And my point is, not that unusual.
No.
So what did you do about it last time? What did we do about it last time? Did you learn anything last time? We did. But it was things we already knew. We just got them confirmed. So we'll try to help you. We'll talk you down off the ledge as best we can and give you some good solid hints about what to do and how to do it, which is basically easy because the number one thing that we're recommending people do right now is, for the moment, do absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a good time to take a couple of days off and go walk on the beach. It's getting warm enough anyway. But, you know, there's a lot of questions out there and a lot of concern, and everybody who watches the market at all knows it's been a very rough week, and that a lot of people are certainly there's somewhere between upset and worried. And I frankly sort of entertained the thought once of jumping out our office window, but since it was first floor, I didn't think it would accomplish much. No, it's not that bad, and we're not going to beat around the bush. It was a terrible week, and Adam will tell you all about it, and then we'll look into the reasons why this was necessary, the reasons why it happened, and the underlying causes and what we as investors should do about them. And all of that gets put together into a very, very easy look. I guess I'd encompass it in a great big word. It's normal.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's uncomfortable, and it's irritating and all that, but it's normal. And that'll be the gist of what goes on for a while. Then we're going to talk about a bunch of other things. I got a little more information on the QLACs, the annuities that go in your IRA. And I started that last week. I want to get a little bit deeper into it. And, of course, what season are we in now? Between now and April 17th this year, we are in tax season. And what happens when tax season starts is the scammers come out. And I'm going to tell you a new way that they're doing things now and what you should do about it to protect yourself. Got a little bit also on what words might mean things. That kind of interesting because you're hearing it now. The political scene, I tell you, if the market reaction were caused by the political scene, then the market would be even worse than it is now, matching the political scene, which is about the worst I have ever seen it. But, you know, we try to avoid that topic for the most part. And the only reason I bring it up is when it involves your money, that there might be some things that we need to talk about. But I predicted over the last couple of weeks that the number one change in the market going forward was the V word is back, volatility. And I had no idea how right a guy could be.
No doubt.
Wow. So speaking of volatility, take it away.
Yeah, so the ironic thing about this week is that we probably saw two of the biggest up days that we will see all year happen this week, and the markets were still down 5%.
Does anybody remember those days?
We remember
yesterday.
Yeah, that was and even yesterday it took a 900 point swing basically to get from negative 500 all the way up to at one point we're up over 400. I think it moved over 1,000 points yesterday in total, and in the right direction.
Three times this week we saw swings that big?
pretty amazing. I think it was Wednesday. It was we saw a 1,500 or 1,600 yeah. point swing. I mean, these types of swings are not normal at all.
Well, every week toward the end of last year, I was saying records are made to be broken. But these aren't the records I wanted broken.
No, no. And volatility like this can take several weeks to get worked out of the system. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised to see more of it this coming week. It's just the everyone is up in arms and doing crazy things, but it will work itself out. So even with that rally of 1.5% on Friday, we gave up over 5% on all three major indexes. It was 5.2 on the Dow, 5.1 on the NASDAQ, 5.2 on the S&P. However, for the year, that only took us to down 2.1 on the Dow, down 0.4 on the NASDAQ, and down 2% on the S&P, which, honestly, that's not that bad of a year. And we're only in February. There's plenty of time for that to change. So it could be worse.
Yeah, we should remember that big one in 16 when we're complaining about this one. We were down something like 15% at this exact moment.
Yep, and that took all of a couple months to get down that far. So that was not as sudden or as severe as this one.
And in fact, we're going to talk about that a little bit. Adam's going to read you an email that we sent out to all of our clients and friends that it was something of an epiphany just putting the thing together, and I think it will assist your comfort level. So we'll do that right after the break.
So I guess the question on everyone's mind is, what caused this? And the answer might surprise you. It's nothing. I know it sounds weird, but it's true. There wasn't a big event that spooked investors, or nothing happened, really. I can't think of a single thing.
Four-hour shutdown of government?
No.
No.
No, it started before that anyway.
Yeah.
So that's why I think this correction is simply a mean reversion. And to some degree, that theory was tested and proven on Friday when the S&P 500 basically bounced off its 200-day moving average. It actually dropped below it a little bit, but then sharply turned north, and it ended up closing higher. So that is usually a good sign. Not that we're Chartists and we don't subscribe to that theory, but if you are, you probably like that move. And I was happy to see it anyway.
Buying into a weekend is a lot different attitude than selling into a weekend.
Absolutely. Another good sign. So according to some research by the Bespoke Group, the last four times the S&P has dipped below its 200-day moving average, it has been up big in the following 6 months. That being said, it does struggle in the following weeks. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that pattern played out again in the coming weeks and months. One of the more painful things about this correction has been that there is nowhere to hide. This one hit bonds, commodities, REITs, and almost every other asset class you can think of. So unless you went to cash on January 26th, chances are you lost some money in the last 2 weeks. And if anyone did that, way to go, but I don't know how you could have predicted this because there was really no signs. Although we've been talking about a correction for probably a year and a half now. We knew it was coming, we just didn't know when, and we did not know it would be this severe and drop so fast. It's unusual for it to happen like that, but it doesn't surprise us that it's here. So all 11 S&P sectors are now lower on the year, with consumer discretionary down the least at a 0.3% decline, followed by technology and healthcare, which are both down less than 3%. Real estate's been hit the hardest, down 10.6%, while energy and utilities are both down more than 9%. It took just 11 trading days for the market to go from extreme overbought territory, which means two standard deviations above its 50-day moving average, to extreme oversold territory, which is two standard deviations below the 50-day moving average.
We probably should explain a little of that after.
I will. I will. I know it's complicated, but that's a very short amount of time for that to happen.
You'd be amazed when you're talking about investing how many times the term standard deviation comes up, and how little understood it might be, but it actually plays into a lot of decisions that big companies, pension fund managers and so on, use a lot, and that's what really drives the market. So right after the break, we'll give you our volatility of the day trivia question. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. How many times did it change directions? Now, this is a schizophrenic market. Anyway, you want to read that email?
Which one? The first one?
Yeah, first one we sent. We like to communicate with our clients as much as possible, and we don't write them weekly emails or daily emails or anything like that because there's plenty going on. Not too much of it is that noteworthy, really, but when things get really interesting, shall we say, I like to send out a little communique. So we put together an email, and those of you who've listened to me for a long time on radio know that I always have the most fun when I go looking for something and I get surprised with the answer or surprised by something that's happened before. So I went searching for this because my first thought this time was, man, this reminds me a lot of 07 and 08. And back then we were communicating a lot with people. So I went looking to see if I could find anything I wrote back then, and I couldn't because, you know, we've changed companies, computers, all that stuff. But something did pop up, and it caught my eye, and we shared it with everybody. And I thought, for the listeners, you might enjoy it too. It's not all that long, but it's rather meaningful, I think. And I hope it helped some people put their mind at ease, and I hope it does it again for you. So take it away.
Sure. So this is actually an email that we sent out in at the end of 2015, early 2016.
Yeah, early 2016.
Yeah.
January 20th of 16.
Okay, January of 2016. And if you remember, the market was dropping fairly rapidly, nothing like now, but still it was on a
pretty sharp
on a somewhat sharp decline over a couple of months.
There weren't many of those up days punctuated.
No, definitely sure. Not. And it's just interesting, the comparison between now and then. And basically it starts out like, well, isn't this a good time? Hint, no. Sanity or insanity? Time will tell. Many of you have been with us for a long time, so many of you will remember the email I sent a few years ago called The Falling Knife. There is time every now and then when the market is so crazy that it is fruitless to attempt to capture the mood. We are there. There is nothing except the falling of oil that, in our opinion, justifies the recent and current market drop. Therefore, we would expect that this is just going to be of short duration. This is not 2008. There is no big event that seems to be causing this decline. Therefore, we are concentrating on the what next part of investing. The most obvious conclusion we can draw is that oil is approaching its low. Being a commodity that is in demand, hard to produce, and expensive to process, distribute, and sell, there is a lower limit where producers will simply shut down until they are allowed to make a profit again. Investors can take advantage of that. We are watching carefully for any signs that oil is bottoming. When it looks good, we will be re-entering the energy sector. That said, we don't believe it's quite there yet. After all, the oldest rule in the book is that the market will overshoot. Soon, it appears we should be there. If anyone disagrees with our hold strategy, please let us know. And if you'd like to participate with the energy buying begins, please let us know. For now, staying the course seems a lot smarter than trying to predict an irrational market. So that's an excerpt from the email. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if you replace the oil portion with, I'm not even sure.
Interest rate
fears.
Expectations, yeah. Yes, fears. Yeah. Fear of higher interest rates.
It's almost identical. Yep. I mean, we could write this email today and just do a find replace and send it out again.
Exactly. And our point then and our point now is that the whole idea of trying to catch the falling knife is you're going to get cut. And there's no reason to do that. If you think there's a conspiracy going on out there among all the big traders to get rid of it, you're probably right.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
No. But back then, remember what happened by end of March in 2016?
We were back to even on the year.
Absolutely.
And from there, the rest of the year was up.
Straight up.
Yep.
So now I have a thing called quarterly results theory. And I've been explaining this a couple times this week. I think the big conspiracy is simply the big mutual fund managers, the big pension managers, the California retirement system, all those people deciding after the year they've had, and they look so good because they closed out their books December 31 at such a high level, they're going to just slide some profits out of this market and sit around and wait a little bit and try to get back in at a lower level. This is my theory now. I have absolutely no way to back this up. I want you all to know that front and center. But to me, they seem to be just selling, 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 selling because it's still not even halfway through the quarter. So as we sneak up on the middle of the quarter, about mid-February, I got a funny feeling that things are going to kind of hang a little bit, and then they're going to start improving their balance sheets again by doing some purchasing. Now, if I'm right, they will repurchase pretty much up to where we were. And if you are able to overlay this quarter with the first quarter of 2016, there might be some surprising similarities. That is about as far as I ever stick my neck out in a prognosticatory way. Is that the word?
Well, I think it makes some sense, because what do you think is going to happen next quarter when earnings start to roll in and the new tax law is in place? These earnings that are coming in right now look great.
And do you have those stats? I've got them right here.
I do have them, but they don't include any benefit from the new tax law. So I think that we're going to see a pretty good first quarter earnings season, and combined with GDP projections that are between 4 and 5%, I mean, you could see a really good first quarter.
Is there any reason in the world not to be an optimist?
I have a hard time right now justifying not being one.
A good earnings beat rate is in the low mid-60s percent-wise. This earnings season, we've had over 1,000 companies reporting so far. The beat rate is 70%
on earnings, and higher than that on revenue.
Yeah, and revenues have been stagnant in the 50s for the most part for years and years and years. They are currently sitting, and all this means is that on the elevated
expectations
of this year for earnings and for revenues, the companies are beating their own elevated expectations. Revenues at 73.4% beat rate so far. I don't remember ever reporting a number that big before.
Well, you have to go back to 2003 to find a rate that high.
That's why I don't remember.
Right. You don't remember what happened yesterday. Long ago. So.
No, the things you remember are more like the 02s and the 08s and
definitely.
Stuff like that. But the point is, things are really good out there, and they're getting better.
The beat rate in the healthcare sector right now is 84%. 84%.
Remember how beat up that was over the last couple of years?
And for real estate, the lowest of all of them is real estate, and right now that stands at 52.3. Now, it wasn't too long ago we were seeing revenue beat rates in the low 50s for the entire market.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's the lowest beat rate right now.
And now, if you want the biggest single indicator that comes out of all those statistics, in my mind, it's the guidance. What guidance means is the companies that report their earnings are going to stick their neck out and tell you what they're expecting for the next quarter. A good number is zero for the number that are going positive and the number that are going negative. It's now at plus 5.4.
Yeah, that's one of the strongest numbers I've ever seen.
And that, again, is piled on top of the recent good expectations. So companies are willing, and I want everybody to know that under the rules of the game, with Regulation FD, which I always say stands for full disclosure, if a CEO sticks his neck out in public and says, I'm expecting a gangbuster quarter, and he doesn't produce it, two things are going to happen. One is the regulators are going to look at him real quizzically, and the other one is shareholders are going to dump their shares.
And usually it means they've got something in their back pocket that they're going to spring out and crush their elevated expectations.
Yep. So I'm saying if they're optimistic, I'm optimistic. And if I'm optimistic, there's good reason for you to at least stay the course.
And price-to-earnings ratios, based on this recent pullback in stocks and the increase in earnings, have really come down. Current levels are right around 20.5. That's down from over 23. And if you look at the forward PE, which takes 2018 earnings projections and applies those instead, they're down in the 16s.
Yeah.
That's way lower than the long-term average. So to me, that looks like a bargain. I'm not going to say that we're not going to drop lower, because it's very possible, but it's starting to look much more attractive than it did 2-3 weeks ago.
Yep. And I think now we've kind of beaten up on this whole thing on the negativity side, and I think we can just sort of let that go now. And in the second half of the show, we've got all kinds of fun topics to talk about. Lines are open, 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. We will get into a variety of fun things and some not so fun things, like who's trying to scam your tax returns this year and what you should do about it. All these things are very important. Even if you're not an investor, you're probably still a taxpayer. And maybe a couple more words about what we're learning about the new tax law, too, which daily is impressing us as getting better and better and better than we expected to see. And how many times can you say that? I'm going to leave you with the last negative word for this half of the show, and we'll be back right after the break. And that word is capitulation. Capitulation is when the little guys in the market throw up their hands and say, I give up, I am done, I am out of here. The next day, the market goes up.
That's what the big guys want.
Yep, you got it. All right, we got Marshall on the line. Marshall, if you don't mind, hang on till we come back. It'll just be a few minutes, and we'll talk about some things that Marshall wants to talk about. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. How many times did the Dow Jones Industrial Average change directions just on the one day that was last Monday? It's more than two. That right. Narrows it right down. Mm-hmm. The universe of numbers above two. Good morning, Marshall.
I'll take my number as a guess, 13.
Would you believe that that's too low?
Yeah, I guess I should. It's kind of like a basketball game.
it know, more or less was.
There are runs and there are runs.
Yeah, you know? But
it happens that way.
Yeah, you know, if the average were plotted vertically instead of horizontally, it would have been a basketball game where you were going back and forth and getting crazy. But, yeah, 13 is too low, believe it or not. So what's on your mind today?
Relieving stress and proper planning.
Okay.
Back in the days of Black Monday, what was that, 1987?
Mm-hmm.
It was, I worked indeed for a company where our receptionist, every day, to start her day, she looked at where everything was in her investments because she was semi-retired.
Mm-hmm.
That day, I was really concerned she was going to have a heart attack. And it was really stressful, and a lot of people were worried about her.
I believe it.
And it taught me a lesson at that time. You got to make these decisions ahead of time when it's not in crisis mode. And if I understand the normal process that you all go through, you first got to figure out, you know, what people have, of course, and then you got to figure out, well, what is their risk tolerance? And then you got to come up with some kind of balance of things.
What are their goals?
Once that's all set in place and you get to a point like today, you kind of look and say, everything at balance where it's supposed to be? And then you pick up the phone and you call Steve or Adam and you say, should I know something I don't already know? Then you kind of like, okay, let's don't get excited about it. And if you're in a position to where you've not quite built the equities, now I'm going to let you answer those questions.
Yeah, exactly.
For the person who hasn't quite gotten to balance yet.
Yeah.
Would you agree that that's
exactly right?
Avoid panic.
In fact, how many times have you heard us say that the hardest part of our job is very often to not do something? Unlike the Congress and some investors who feel like everything that happens demands a response of some sort. Very often, the hardest thing we do is to do nothing when we know it's the right thing to do. And sometimes, as I said, you got to talk some people down off the ledge to convince them of that. But if everybody's in it together, planning before investing, you are absolutely right. You've made your plans. You know what your long-term goals are. You know what your time frame is, which is the most important thing in investing. And you've already set it up. What happens between point A and point B is less relevant than the fact that you're going to hit point B given enough time. So you're right. And if that's what we get paid for partially, we're all in.
Well, thank you for being the calming voice. I've got to tell you, when we go through political ups and downs and swings,
yep,
there happens to be somebody I listen to that is always a voice of reason and very well knowledgeable on the subject. So I put you guys here on Saturday morning, and I hope my wife is listening. I know she gets anxious about these things, but Steve, you have that calming radio voice that explains why, and it sure makes it easier for me to have a conversation.
Well, thank you, and you would know it if I were panicked.
Oh,
the
yeah.
voice would be a
yeah,
lot
I
different.
Understand.
Yeah, for sure.
I understand. Thank you all.
Well, we appreciate the call, and we appreciate you always being a friend of the show.
Bye.
Take care. All right, trivia question still out there. How many times did the Dow reverse on Monday? And we know that 13 is too low. That makes it a volatile day.
Yeah, definitely.
That V word. All right, Adam had a couple more stats he wanted to throw at people. And this is not negative stuff.
No, all
this
positive.
This is really good stuff.
Actually, all positive. So if you remember, if you're a regular listener, it was a few months ago I told you that you guys need to go quit your jobs, or at least more of you need to go quit your jobs. And
we were pretty adamant for a while.
Why was that? Because there are better jobs out there and available, but people are hesitant for whatever reason throughout this recovery, especially in the last couple of years, where more and more jobs became available, and even to a point where there was a record number of jobs available. We're still near that point, not quite there. But no one was quitting because I think everyone got scared in 2008 about ever leaving the devil that you know for the devil that you don't know. And the quit rate was showing that. It was still at very, very low levels. But this month, it actually came out and it climbed to 2.6%, which is closer to what we saw in the early 2000s economic expansion. So good job. You listened. You went out and quit your job, found a better one, hopefully. And I am happy to see it because that means that you probably increased your paycheck and maybe increased your upward mobility. And it's just an overall positive thing when we see the quit rate climb. It means people are feeling confident and ready to make a move to further themselves. So good for you.
Yeah. Better late than never.
Another positive note, jobless claims. First time jobless claims continue to trend lower. We thought that might not even be possible.
Right.
But the best streak since the 1970s remained intact this week, with the number coming in at 221,000. That's now 153 straight weeks below 300,000. That's considered the point of being a very healthy market, and it's just an incredible streak. Because in 1970, the U.S. had about a third less people than we have right now, and that number is not adjusted in any way for population growth. So the other positive news I have is the ISM Manufacturing and Services Reports came out in January. And it turns out manufacturing slowed down a little bit, but the service sector more than made up for it by crushing expectations and creating a new post-recession high of 59.9. And within that report, there's an employment section that showed the highest reading on record ever for January. So that just backs up everything we've been saying about the job market. It's pretty incredible right now.
You got to go back to 1973 to find this few people getting laid off in a week. And that is not adjusted for population.
Right.
Imagine the population in 73 versus now. I throw out the number 2/3. I'm not sure how close that is. But the point is, if you have a job and you're not satisfied with it, we'll go back to our old advice and say, quit and get a new one. And if you already did that, we'd love to hear from you. And by the way, when you get a better job, you probably won't be paying more taxes.
No, you might actually have the same tax level in a higher paying job, which is great.
That be fun. And then one more piece of very positive news for investors is the bullish sentiment. The number of people are bullish on the market dropped precipitously, and they're always wrong.
Always. And it was at a 2-year high, so that is it's come way down, and that usually means we're approaching a buying point.
Yep. So just all kinds of reasons to be optimistic. I almost said happy. Happy comes after optimistic is proven to be correct. How's that? So you get happy eventually. On the other hand, now, if this goes on for another week or two, don't be shocked.
No, not at all.
We won't kid you about that it's over, but just be careful. All right, what happens in April? Again, seems like it's always getting to April. Taxes. Anyway, when the season comes out, and by the way, I got an email this morning for a lot of you who are investors. A lot of 1099s got published about yesterday, People have been asking now, when am I going to get all the investment numbers? But I want everybody to be forewarned that there are at least three rounds of 1099s that are published. There's the easy batch. They're already out. This is the medium complexity batch that came out this week. And then there's a more complicated batch that comes out in another couple of weeks. Don't hurry to do your taxes. The only reason to hurry to do your taxes is because you got a refund coming. And if you got a refund coming, you're doing something wrong. You should change your withholding and not let Uncle Sam play with your money all year round. That's not a good idea. Anyway, when we get closer and closer to tax season, it comes out. So how are they doing it this year? What are they trying to do to get you for this year? Well, instead of going after you, which they still are, and we'll have those every week, this is a new one. They're going on to your tax preparers' websites and their computers and tunneling into the computers, picking up the names of their clients, their Social Security numbers, their account numbers, and that sort of thing. And then they try to file your taxes for you, working around your preparer. Isn't that special? Now, there is a thing that you can do. Ask your tax preparer if they belong to the Security Summit's Don't Take the Bait campaign. In other words, they're training people not to do the dumb things that can involve getting your money lost. I'll talk more about that after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. I tell you, I got out of the car here at the station, having left the beach, and something happened. The sun was out, and the air was warm, and when that happens, your grass is about to start to grow. Call Troy at 662-9794. Our trivia question is still open. How many times did the Dow Jones Industrial Average change directions on Monday on its way to a world record performance for volatility? I don't want that to happen again. Anyway, let's see, QLAX, Qualified Longevity Annuity Contract. Adam and I were talking at the break that some of the planning people now, some of the gurus we all listen to, are talking now that you should be planning life expectancies up to 120 years. And 120 years is just a really long time. Can you get there with quality of life? I don't know. I was talking about the guy who did the coin toss for the Super Bowl, who was a Pearl Harbor survivor. And this guy was just good looking and sharp as a tack. And it was something to see. And you know it could happen. And the QLAC is a device for the really lucky people. If you have an IRA or 401k, something like that, and you're not going to need all of your required minimum, and you're staring 70 and a half years old in the face, it's a way to defer a portion of your required minimum by buying a QLAC inside the account. That defers the amount of your required minimum distribution up to the date you want to that can be no longer than age 85. But that's a lot of years of saving a lot of money that would just be taxable income to you when you least need it. Good morning, Cheryl.
Hi. I work in an appliance store, and I was going to buy a washing machine, our own, and it's $900, but they said after the tariff it'll be $1,300. And so I'm wondering if the, you know, the money's good, the tax returns and all that. We got a little bit of a raise. But is it all going to be spent?
The largest number that I have seen resulting from this tariff is $50. $400, I would like to see the justification for.
Yeah, I saw $50 as well.
What brand name?
Well, there's a Fisher-Paykel washing machines.
Not familiar with it.
I am not familiar, so I don't know where they're made. There is a plant being finished right now by LG, I believe it is, in Iowa, and they've put on a second shift on the construction because they want them manufactured here to avoid the tariff on the import. But I have never heard anything above $50. I think perhaps you might want to shop that around at other places. Because I don't believe them, frankly.
Yeah. I didn't know if the, you know, if the countries that are paying the tariffs are putting that on the goods.
There's no reason to. They would just render themselves uncompetitive.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll certainly pass it on to the consumer.
I'll have to ask them again. Maybe I misunderstood something.
If you can figure out what their justification for that is, aside from scare tactics to make you buy now, which is what I strongly suspect it is, then please call us back and explain it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you want to guess our trivia, by the way?
How about four?
I tell you what, I'm going to give you a free guess because we already know that 13 is too low. I'll give you one more just for playing the game.
13's too low. 17.
Still too low.
Okay.
It was a wild day. Know. Cheryl, thank you, and we'd love to hear the results of that.
Okay.
Thanks.
Have a good one, Cheryl.
There's a lot of people on the right, and you all know where we stand there, who hate the concept of tariffs because they're, if you remember back in the old days in your history, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, things did not always work well when we started imposing tariffs. Bush put them on imported steel for a while and then was able to take them off. Harley-Davidson did the same thing. And if you remember back in the Harley was trying to protect itself from Kawasaki, and after a very short time, Harley went to the government and asked them to delete that because they got back on their feet, they got competitive, they got their quality improved, and they became very competitive without it. A tariff is a way to regain equal footing. It is not meant to be a lifetime thing. Governments that are supporting their industries have to learn that free trade means fair trade, that they can't give the manufacturer a $50 bill every time they ship a washing machine in here without us getting on their case now. So you want to build a factory here and employ Americans? Hallelujah. You want to just do what you're doing over there and see how it comes out? Fine. But this is going to level the field for a period of time, and I will be the first one to say it's wrong if they last very long. You shouldn't have to last very long to become competitive. But that's the purpose of this whole thing. And, yes, it does go against a lot of free trader types like me.
And me too.
Yeah, and full disclosure here, I was a strong supporter of NAFTA. But there's a Paul Harvey moment here too. The rest of that story is that NAFTA was supposed to be looked at every 5 years and tweaked to make sure it was working to the benefit of everyone. Guess how many times since the middle 90s it has been looked at? Big fat zero until this year. That's what's wrong with NAFTA. That's why it has to change. So you'll hear a lot of stuff, a lot of whining from both sides of the aisle, frankly. And the point is we're going to get some free and fair trade deals done now. From that moment on, it's up to our manufacturers and our workers if they can stay competitive. But getting competitive, they're going to need a little hand up from the government, and they're getting it. And I, for one, have just backed off all my criticisms until I see if it works.
I've often wondered how Mercedes, BMW, and Toyota can make cars in the United States, and our companies are putting plants in Mexico to be competitive. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense.
No. What do 385,000 auto workers have in common?
One thing.
They work for foreign companies, but they work in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And it's probably much higher than that by now. And plants are still going up. So don't get discouraged by some of the stuff that seems like maybe it's the wrong idea. Anyway, back another, just wrapping up the idea on the QLAC for a moment. What you want to do, if you're interested in reducing your required minimum distribution, that might be a good reason to give us a call. And before we sign off, I'm going to have Adam go through how to contact us. But there is a way to defer some of that. And the good news is also that once the QLAC does kick in, if you happen to be one of those people that gets to 100, 110, 120, it is an annuity. It will keep paying you. The other good news is there's a clause in there so that you won't lose it. If you were to die, that QLAC will pay your beneficiary rather than you. So it's kind of a win-win for people who are in the very fortunate situation not to need all that. One more note on the tax thing also. To protect yourself, you live in Florida or Georgia if you're listening to this over the regular airwaves. Living in either of those two states is an automatic qualification to get an IRS PIN number. That PIN number is the number one protection you can give to your own taxes. Go to irs.gov and just type in PIN number and they'll tell you exactly how to do it. And if you have a Florida address on your tax return or a Georgia address on your tax return, you will get a PIN number. All that means is every communication with the IRS that you ever have, if the person doesn't know the PIN number because that person isn't you, they're not going to communicate with you, period. All right, I'm going to give out the answer and then have Adam tell you how to get in touch with us if you want to. The Dow Jones Industrial Average on Monday, on its way to that crazy, crazy close, it changed directions 29 times. Unbelievable.
Pretty high.
All right, our day jobs. What do we do? How to reach us? And we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we are Fee-Only Financial Planners. We're located in Jacksonville Beach. We're right off of Butler Boulevard, so easy to get to and from every point in the city. And if you would like to contact us, you can always find our website, vanweefinancial.com. And on that site, you can book a meeting with us right from the website. You don't even have to call. But if you want to call, you can reach us at 904-685-1505. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/vanweefinancial, Twitter at vanweefinancial. Or if you don't like calling, you can email us info@vanweefinancial.com.
Yeah, and one thing I always like to tell people is if you have questions and you're a little squirrelish about coming on the show and maybe getting your voice recognized or anything like that, send us an email if there's a topic you want to talk about, and we'd love to cover it. You can see some of the things on our mind by going to our website, but what's on your mind is something we would really like to know. So do not hesitate. Adam reads all this stuff frequently and has responded many times to good questions that come in. So don't think that just because you're a little shy that you can't get the advice that you would really like to get on the radio. We won't charge you. We won't call you. We will not pester you. We're not that type. So have a good one. Thanks for listening again this week, and we'll see you next week. This is the Vanweef Financial Hour.